Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Ilana and friends with some revelations. Little known fact of the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Hey everyone, new episodes of Little Known Facts drop every Monday and you can find them on your favorite podcast provider. Also, if you go to the website, littleknownfactspodcast.com, you'll find behind the scenes photos, videos, and interviews and lots more on the gallery page. And if you are loving these intimate, candid conversations with all the artists who come on the show, please head over to the contributions page. I depend on these donations to continue to bring you these interviews every week. So if you love the show, please donate.
A-OK. A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guest this week is the extraordinary actor, Modern Family's own Jesse Tyler Ferguson. Jesse sat down with me at the W Hotel in Times Square in New York City, the greatest city in the world, at my live podcast event. It's a series called Broadway at the W, and I love doing it there. It's always an honor. And you'll know it's a live broadcast as soon as you hear it, because you'll hear clinking glasses and a lot of audience reaction. And it was pure joy, and I hope you enjoy listening as much as I loved chatting with Jesse Tyler Ferguson. Enjoy.
Is this yours? Did you ask for wine?
That is my wine. Okay. I preset my wine.
Oh my gosh. First of all, so I don't forget, thank you to the W Hotel for being such lovers of Broadway and creating a venue like this, because it's pretty amazing. And Jesse, thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
Jesse just got here from rehearsal. He is doing
play practice.
Play practice.
Yes.
Do you know that song, I Love Play Rehearsal?
No.
It's great. There's a show coming to New York called Be More Chill. And I can't stop singing I Like Play Rehearsal because I really do. And obviously you do too, because let's face it, you don't need to do a play anymore.
Theater is my first love. It's what I wanted to. I never imagined I was going to be on television. So coming to working on a new piece too is just such an honor.
Well, yeah. It's called Log Cabin and it's at Playwrights Horizons, and we're all gonna go see it together. Let's all go together. Are you all in? So I start every episode, and by the way, some of you who are here had no idea that you were going to be part of a live podcast. You were just drinking during the day, like you do, and suddenly we appeared. So thank you for being a part of this experience, and thank you for being respectful, because we're recording, and everything you say and do will be online.
Forever.
Forever. But I start every episode, for those of you who are fans of the show, with a little known fact. And a little known fact about Jesse Tyler Ferguson is that the Pulitzer Prize winning playwright, I'm going to use that as a vocal warm up next time, Pulitzer Prize playwright, Tony Kushner, who won the Pulitzer for Angels in America, which I saw the other day, both parts at once, so 7 hours of theater, was the officiant at Jesse's wedding. So I just want to, like, imagine Tony Kushner being the officiant at your wedding, and it would make me think, was it like a 7 hour, like, was that really long?
There was a dinner break.
Were you like, Tony?
Yeah.
Enough.
No,
already,
I mean,
with the pros.
It was the most special thing that has ever happened to me, really. I mean, we were talking about who would be our dream officiant, and I was like, well, for me, it would be Tony Kushner. That play meant so much to me. I also just saw it on Thursday and Friday. And, you know, I grew up closeted in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I didn't have a lot of exposure to the outside world. And so the fact that there was this play that I read over and over and over again, and it was such a testament that there is a larger world, and there was great minds out there. It was like, you know, this, I didn't have the internet, I didn't have social media to connect to people who were like-minded, and so this play meant so much to me. And when we were talking about officiants, I was like, I would love for Tony to do this, and we asked him, and he said yes. And he wrote this beautiful ceremony. I mean, the ceremony itself deserves a Pulitzer Prize. I mean, it was just such a beautiful ceremony and so inclusive, and he's just very smart. It also should be said that Celia Keenan Bolger sang at my wedding, and she's here tonight.
What did she sing?
She and her husband John sang a song called "The Book of Love," and she's happy to sing it now.
Celia, come up for one second. Just what?
Nope.
Not who wrote the Book of Love. Not that one.
No, it's a much prettier song than that.
Oh,
not that. That's not a pretty song. No. But yes, it was. Tony was an amazing officiant.
That's incredible. Well, we're done. Thank you so much for coming.
Goodbye. Thanks, everybody.
Anyway, I can't imagine there's anyone in this room who hasn't seen Modern Family, because it's now on its 100th season.
100th season. Yes.
It's incredible. That's the residuals.
Yeah, 10th
awesome.
Year is coming in next year is our 10th season.
Well, mm-hmm. I guess that's sort of been the dream job, to get to do a show that gets picked up, not just for one or two seasons, but to have a life in that way.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of actors in this room, and I think they can all relate that, you know, getting a job is so hard. And when you get a job that you like, that's a great thing. And if you get that job and it's done well and critics respond to it, that's another thing. But for me to get a job that also has sort of this social impact is just the cherry on the sundae. I mean, I do feel like the show was sort of a culture touchstone for things like marriage equality. And, totally. You know, I think there was a lot of people who said, oh, I don't know any gay people. And then like, but I know Mitch and Cam, and they're in my living room every Wednesday. And so like, they're like, oh, I do know gay people and I like them. So I do feel like, you know, we got in there.
You did. You snuck in there. Well, how amazing when you just described at the beginning of this conversation, growing up in Albuquerque and feeling like, and obviously there were other people, you just didn't know it, and that's what
oh,
we
for
find
sure.
out.
No, I was the only gay person in Albuquerque.
In the entire
I should have
city.
Said, no, I'm sure there were. I'm sure there was probably a few others. Yes.
Is anyone here from Albuquerque, and are you gay? You know what? You're right. You are the only
it.
Person.
There you are, because this is a great cross section of America.
Exactly. Theater lovers. Yeah. Not a lot of gay people in the theater.
No.
Wherever you go, you're alone, Jesse. Well. I think when you talk about how you grew up, imagine if there had been a show like Modern Family at the time, and it must feel so gratifying to know that in a small way or a really big way, you're exposing people to the possibility of like all those dreams being real.
Yeah, I mean,
possible.
It's something that I don't like to pat myself on the back about it because
go
I think
ahead,
that's ridiculous.
Ahead.
But
that's what we're here for.
But it, you know, I can't ignore the social ramifications that the show has, and I do hear it firsthand from people and from parents, and it means a great deal to me.
Well, it means a great deal to all of us, and that was so much why I wanted to be here and just to say thank you for exposing so many of our children to something that they wouldn't have had an opportunity with so much humor. And I think the key to it is how funny it is.
Thank you.
So, however, that being said, you worked before that, and you had a whole life before Modern Family, believe it or not. So I want to go back. I want to go back, and I want to go back in song. And I want to go back. You grew up in Albuquerque, and at some moment in your life, you fell in love with the performing arts. Can you pinpoint the moment? Was it gradual? Can you share it with us? Do you love the performing arts?
I do. I love them very much.
I feel like you do. I don't want to be presumptuous.
I was taken to the theater when I was very young. My mom took me to see a performance that the Albuquerque Children's Theater was doing. Basically, it's kids performing for other kids. And I remember sitting in the audience. I think we were seeing Alice in Wonderland or something. And I was like, I love what's happening, and I want to be on the other side. I want to be on the stage. And so I told my mom I wanted to join the Albuquerque Children's Theater, and she was very confused because I was a very shy kid. I was an introvert, and she was like, you want to act? And I was like, yes. So she obviously let me do it, and I definitely opened up, and I found myself through the performing arts.
You have gone on record as saying that you don't feel like singing as much as you love it. You feel like there might be people who can sing at a different level, but that you know how to perform a song with confidence?
I think so. I mean, I certainly, when I wanted to do musical theater, which was exactly what I wanted to, I didn't even want to like straight plays. Like, I want to be in musicals. And
like that.
And I was like, and I'll just be in the chorus if that's okay. Like, that's fine with me. But like, I can't sing like I'm in like Les Miserables, all these shows that I love
like
so much.
Like Celia Keenan Bolger.
Like Celia Keenan Bolger.
Again.
Literally.
Again.
Oh, she's pretending to be shy. But I know my limits, and I found myself being drawn to things that I didn't have to sing so beautifully, and that were more character driven. And I do love finding the challenges of acting a song.
Right.
And those are the opportunities that I was fortunately given later.
You went to Catholic school?
That's right.
Great. When you finished high school, there was an opportunity to go to college.
Right.
And did you go, I'm going to be a theater major?
I always knew I wanted to move to New York, and I didn't even really know what that meant. Uh-huh. I just knew that that's
where I... So you never came?
I came on a trip with them. So the Albuquerque Civic Light Opera Association would go every year, and they would bring basically senior citizens to New York City, and they would see like 8 shows in 5 days. And I was like, I'm going to go on that trip with the senior citizens. And I was the youngest person on this trip by at least 50 years. Literally, it was me and blue hairs.
Yes.
And I stayed at the Hotel Edison just down the street. And I saw all the shows with the blue hairs. And we went on the Circle Line bus tour. And
Do you remember what you saw?
I saw my very first show I saw was Falsettos, which was not on the docket. It was not on the docket. I said, I'm going to take a personal day. I didn't go on the Radio City Music Hall tour. I tabled that. And instead, I went to go see Falsettos, which was my main objective. I was like, I'm in town and Falsettos is playing. That's what I'm going to go see. We saw Guys and Dolls with Nathan Lane and Faith Prince. We saw Phantom of the Opera, which I was very excited to see. And then I kind of saw it. And I was like, I thought it would be bigger.
The chandelier
was pretty cool. But it's so interesting because when I saw Falsettos, and that being my first Broadway show that I ever saw, I remember watching it, just being so enamored with it and being like, oh my God, William Finn, James Lapine. My dream would be to work with these two people.
And cut to...
Fast forward, James Lapine directed me and William Finn Spelling Bee. So,
with Celia Keenan Bolger.
With Celia Keenan Bolger. Yeah. Third time's a charm. Drink when you hear Celia Keenan Bolger.
So have people here seen 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee? Okay. The amazing thing is that truly YouTube, you talked about how we did not grow up with the internet. But if you haven't seen it, you can obviously download the cast recording because it's extraordinary. But you can also see some of the most brilliant video clips of Jesse Tyler Ferguson, not just in the play, but behind the scenes with Leaf. Who's your...
We did these little mockumentaries.
Yeah. Hilarious.
Sarah Salzberg, who was one of the original company members of Spelling Bee and was one of like... She kind of helped co-conceive it and really got the thing produced.
Right.
Sarah Salzberg still to this day can't sit still for very long. Mm. She always has to be busy doing something. So even though we were doing a Broadway musical and we were very busy,
eight shows a week,
she's like, let's do something else. So we were making these little mockumentaries of, you know, these kids at home. And so I did a few videos of Leif Koneybearer at home being homeschooled and, you know, playing tag by himself in the woods.
Not sad at all. What was your Broadway debut?
My Broadway debut was in On the Town, which was started at the Delacorte Theater in Central Park. They sort of celebrated the end of the Shakespeare. They basically did every Shakespeare play without repeating any Shakespeare plays for I don't know how many years.
So
many plays. I mean, it started when I think George Wolfe took over as artistic director. He's like, we're just going to plow through all the plays. And they finished with like Henry V. And they're like, to celebrate finishing the Shakespeare canon, we're going to do a Broadway musical. And we're going to do something that's a love letter to New York City. And what's more of a love letter to New York City than On the Town? And so I was cast in this production of On the Town when I was 21 years old. It was the first job I got out of.
Did you have to audition for it?
I did.
Did you have to sing?
I remember everything about it.
Walk us through it.
I went in for a general audition with Heidi and Jordan, the casting directors of the Public Theater, and I was non-equity, and I had an agent who was barely my agent. He told me he was only my agent because he needed someone.
Was he hip-pocketing you?
He sort of was, and he said that he only had me in his catalog because he needed someone with red hair. So that's good for your confidence.
That must have felt so good.
Yeah. But I got seen for this, and I sang Never Will I Marry from Green Willow.
Do you remember like the very first line, how that goes?
Never, never, never will I marry. It's a terrible song for an audition. It's a great song, but like no one wants to hear that. Never, never, never will I wed. No. Cut him off.
They're like, but Jesse, for some reason, gonna stop you.
I also sing Try Me from She Loves Me, which was a little bit more successful.
Yes.
Anyway, there was something there, and they called me back, and I got to meet George Wolfe and Betty Comden and Adolph Green. And at this point...
Oh, you are playing to the right room. Did you hear that? And then this half is like, what? What?
They are the book writers of On the Town and Singing in the Rain and just Bandwagon. And they were at this point very old.
Yeah.
And I
ate that's off. That's what they're saying about us.
That's what they're saying about
they're
us
like
right now. They're very old. Adolph Green couldn't hear very well. Mm. And, you know, when you can't hear so well, you speak louder because you can't hear how loud you are.
It's so true.
It's so true. And so when I finished reading my scenes with the casting director, he leans over to Betty and thinks he's whispering, but he goes, "He's very good." So I was like, at this point, I'm done. Like, Adolph Green said I was very good. I'm good to go. But I was offered the job, which was very exciting.
Who else was in that cast?
Jose Lana was Gaby. Robert Montano, Mary Testa was Madame Tilly. It was a lot of new people. Annie Golden, who, you know, she's on Orange is the New Black now, but I knew her from, she was the original Squeaky Frome in Assassins. She played Hildy's roommate. And then, of course, Leah Delaria was Hildy, and I, to this day, am very close with her still.
You are close. I want to say, I put on Twitter, like, questions for Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and the number one was like, tell us about Chrissy Teigen's baby shower.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I know that you are known for other things, but I do feel like in my deep dive and research into you, like other than being at Meghan and Harry's wedding yesterday, which you were, and now you're here, which is incredible.
Exactly.
It's like Jesse and Michelle Obama and Jesse at Crit. Like, you know, a lot of people that a lot of people think they know, but they don't really. They just know them from the internet, but you really know them.
I mean, I don't say like me and Michelle Obama don't go way back. I've met her like at a photo op a few times.
Okay, how many people here have met Michelle Obama?
Okay. We got a few.
I've met. Do you want to hear my... No. But I'm just saying, like, you're very well-liked.
Well, that's what I want to say.
You're very well-liked.
Well, but all these... Michelle Obama's a very cool
good
person,
friend.
Obviously. Yeah, but I mean, like, someone like Chrissy Teigen is also just happens to be someone I really like as well. She's a very nice person. That's why I'm...
Was that her baby shower?
Right. I was at her baby, yes.
And then she had the baby.
And then she just had her baby, yes.
Incredible.
Yes.
But people,
I delivered it, by the way.
That's amazing. You are in an off-Broadway play and delivering Chrissy Teigen's baby.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
In one day.
Right?
That's impressive. So On the Town, you're off. You're making your Broadway debut.
Yeah, so that the show at the Delacorte ended up transferring to Broadway, and that's how I made my debut. I mean, I also was sort of, I got a taste of medicine on my first outing in theater because the show did not do well on Broadway, and we ran, I think, 3 months and closed early, and it played at the Gershwin Theater, which is where Wicked is now, and it's a barn
what?
Of a theater.
Wicked?
It's this little show called Wicked.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Don't know it.
But nothing is more depressing than doing a show, and the people who are doing Wicked never know what this feels like, but
no.
Doing a show at the Gershwin when it's like 200 people in the audience because
and
it's like
a 50,000
they all kind of like
seat.
Move to the front and then there's just like vast emptiness behind them and
I'm
just
so
like
sorry.
Oh, it was so depressing
so
to see
sorry.
That show crumble.
And right before they're like, this is what you hear. If anyone wants to come sit in the front.
Yeah, basically. Basically.
Totally welcome. I'm so sorry. Guess what's not happening to you anymore? That.
Well, you know, I mean, it could still happen.
This
could
is
still
a
be
full
in a
house. There are
is,
25 people here.
If anyone from the bar wants to move forward, we can.
Or even sit right behind us and make shadow puppets behind our head. So I had the great privilege of seeing 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And let me say the title again. Isn't it the 25th?
I think it might be. I don't know. Just add another word.
Celia Keenan-Bolger, is there a the at the beginning?
There is a the.
Yeah, yeah.
At the 25th, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Was that as fun to do as it was to watch? Because it was a tremendous honor and crazy fun to be in the audience
sweet.
Of that show.
It was a dream job. I mean, not only was the cast such a wonderful group of people, and I'm friends with every single one of them to this day. And
they're all here.
This is, 11 years later, and we're all still very, very close. But, it's very rare to get to create a character from the ground up and, actually create dialogue for the character. And it was just a very collaborative process. And I was also, like I said, working with icons of mine.
Yeah.
I mean, the people that were my dreams to work with. To have William Finn sit down at a piano and play a song that he's written for you was just very emotional for me.
Yeah.
Then to have an audience that responded so generously to it, and we truly felt like it was hilarious. I mean, we just did a reunion concert of it, 2 years ago, and we all just were laughing so hard. We're like, I forgot how funny this show is, and it's just something that I feel like really lives up. I think it will withstand the test of time. I've had the great honor of going to see it performed at different high schools, and every single time I get incredibly moved by it, just because it's nice. I mean, I enjoy being a part of that legacy, but also seeing kids, take something that you created and make it their own is just, it's why I do theater,
right.
to live on and to have an imprint in someone's life. I think it's just one of the main reasons I do what I do.
And I think so many people either go to the theater or love being a part of it themselves. And that show kind of perfectly captures this idea of when you feel weird in your life, and then there's a place where you don't feel weird. And actually being weird is what gets you ahead. Like in that show, everyone was like a crazy Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs weirdo.
Absolutely. Right.
And here was a place to celebrate that. And we all saw ourselves in the different characters. As extreme as they were,
right. They
actually reflect real human beings.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of what you guys did in that show. They were so grounded in integrity and humanity, so that no matter how far you went with your characters and how absurd they got, and maybe larger as the production went on
longer.
That they were really rooted in a love for these people.
Yeah.
It was really beautiful.
You got it.
I got it.
You got the point of the show.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope I win something because I love winning. you have something that very few people get to do, which is what we were talking about before, was to move into the world of television in a show that really has touched people in so many ways and has reflected so many different kinds of lives for so long now. When you talk about Spelling Bee and you being able to have input into how the character evolved, you are now living Mitchell. Pritchard?
Pritchett, yeah.
Pritchett, yeah. Sorry. I feel like it should have been Pritchard, and I'm curious.
I agree.
Is
and
it too late?
I'm going to talk to the writers. I think we could fit that in.
Yeah, I mean, for the next 10 seasons, if you're like, oh my God, it was like some funny bit, like they find like documents on Ancestry.com.
Absolutely.
And it was Pritchard.
That's a great idea.
I'm just
saying,
that's a whole
episode.
And I think
that can carry us through all of season 10, actually. It could be the arc of season 10.
They jumped the shark when it became about the last name, and I take full responsibility for that. So can you talk to us about your audition for Modern Family?
Yeah. First of all, I was already in LA because I had done a show before that ran a season that I was very proud of, but it didn't last. It was called
so
The Class.
So you had the heartbreak of that.
I had the heartbreak of that, which
you
I'm glad I did.
You also played, but that you were a straight character.
I was. I played straight, believe it or not, and
yeah.
I did it very well.
Yeah.
That's not funny. That's not
just
actually funny.
Just because it only lasted one season
yeah,
has
I wasn't
nothing
the
to
reason
do with that.
It got
no.
canceled.
No.
Or maybe I was. I don't
no,
know.
No, absolutely
but,
not.
I was living in LA, and then the writer's strike happened, and I was sort of tried to see that through, and I was like, I'm going to stay in LA, I'm already here. And then I was really about to move back to New York I was workshopping the role of Buddy the Elf in the musical version of Elf, and that was what I was going to do next. And then the script for Modern Family came, and my agent knew I wanted to move back to
Is he your
New
real
York.
Agent at this point?
He is, yeah. Okay. He still is.
Yeah.
And he said, I know you want to move back to New York, but I think there's something with the script. I think you should read it. And I read it, and I immediately fell in love with it. But they wanted me to read for the role of Cameron. And I thought, I just don't see myself in that
Imagine
role.
Imagine a world.
Yeah, exactly.
With Jesse Tyler
It could have happened.
Is Cam.
I just mean.
Picture it.
Okay. It would have been fine.
Yeah, totally.
It probably would have been canceled. But I said, I really feel like I'm more of a Mitchell, and I would love to read for Mitchell. Instead, they're like, no, they want to see for Cam. So I was like, all right, whatever. And there was the thinking in my head was like, if I am part of the core family, I won't be fired.
Yeah,
like
smart.
If I was like part of the core family.
Not the
if
boyfriend.
You're like married in, you can get divorced. Yeah. You can, I don't know, they could kill you off. I just feel like there's job security
smart.
In being part of the core family. Yes. That was actually where it mostly came from.
Yes, be a Pritchard.
be a Pritchard.
Be a Pritchard.
And
You'll
so
totally
I read for Cam, but I read for Cam as if I was playing Mitchell, like my idea of what Mitchell was going to be. And I got through half of the Cam scenes, and they said, you know what, stop. You should actually be reading for Mitchell. And I was like, that's what I told you, but no one wants to listen.
Yeah.
And so they said, do you want to go on the hallway for a little while and just look at the sides? I said, no, I would like to come back on another day when I'm prepared.
Ooh,
so I
sassy.
Took it. I wanted them to, you know, I wanted them to want me.
Yeah.
And so I came back the next day, and I read for Mitchell. And
the next day.
Yeah, the next day. But not
too
not long.
I'm not coming back until tomorrow. At 7 a.m.
Yeah.
I'll be right there.
I never left the audition room. I just sat in the corner the entire time. No, but I read for Mitchell, and I was actually the first person cast.
Wait, the first
lovely.
Person asked to did you have to test screen tests?
I did
for
screen
this?
Tests, and I tested. Ty Burrell was also in the group of people testing with
he
me
is
for
so
for Phil.
Not funny.
He's so not funny.
It's so sad.
Shocking that he
I
got
can't
this part.
Believe he's no. still on the show. Terrible.
We've tried to replace him, but
I'm
the
so
fans
sorry.
Have spoken.
I guess
no,
so.
He's so he's genius. But Ty actually had to test like 3 or 4 times. He had really hard. They really wanted to hire an established star in that part, and I was the first person that they cast. So they really kind of wanted to star cast.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you know of other people? Sometimes I'll be auditioning, and then a friend will be like, "Oh, I was just offered this part," and you're like, "Oh, because I'm going in to read for it."
I do know that. No. I do know that Tony
confused.
Hale. Tony Hale was like the ideal Mitchell for them. That's who, like, when they had like a dream board of like who would they cast, it was Tony Hale for Mitchell. So I knew that was someone that was like in the zeitgeist of.
So having had the experience of auditioning in the way that you have, not being on the show, so I can speak to the first part, the audition part. When you sign a contract that shows you how much money potentially you may make for a very long time, suddenly the idea of, oh, it's just another audition and I'm going to pretend it's just another audition goes out the window because it's actually a house, right?
Right. They
At
do
the
this,
end of the rainbow. So
this is something they only do in television. You can't test for the network without signing the contract first. So you are given a contract that says, like, this is how much money you'd be making. And you sign this contract and then you put it aside and pick up your audition sides again and then go into it's the most asinine, crazy, barbaric thing that they could do to an actor. Be like, here it is.
Yeah.
Hope you do a good job.
Maybe.
It's insane. And
yes.
everyone is signing the contracts together.
Yes.
It's totally bizarre.
But somehow you went in and did your work anyway.
Yes. Yes.
Which is incredible.
I mean, I think part of it helped because I had been on a television show before and I knew that this was part of the process.
Right.
And also there was this thinking, I was like, if I don't get this, I'm going to go play Buddy the Elf.
Which is the dream.
Which is the dream. I do feel like I was sad to let that go, but you know.
Who ended up doing Buddy the Elf because you couldn't? Do you remember?
Does anyone remember who was the original? Sebastian. What's his last name? Yes. He's very, very talented.
So you know what?
Married
you
to gave Stephanie him a Block. He's very talented.
Yeah.
Also doing TV now.
Yeah. So you gave him a present.
Yeah.
Which is really
which
nice
Which I
of
remind
you.
Him about every time I see him. No.
Sebastian.
Yeah.
I gave you Buddy the Elf.
Very good.
So you do the pilot and you don't know anyone yet.
No, none of us. I had met Eric. So I was cast first. And so they had me screen testing and chemistry reading with possible Camerons.
Who were some of the other Camerons?
Well, one of them is actually the guy who plays Longinus on our show. He got cast as Longinus. He's one of our reoccurring friends. Couldn't be farther from Eric. He's a tall, black, skinny, tall, black guy, and Eric's, you know, not. Yeah. But I did read with several different Camerons, and it was sort of, it felt like speed dating.
Yeah, it is.
It was like this weird, weird thing where I was like, you know, that was, it's also very bizarre being in an audition room with someone when you're not auditioning, but you need to be there for someone. I didn't like being in there. I didn't like seeing other people's process. I feel like it's such a private thing to audition, and I just right. did not like being in the room with
but
people.
How lucky they were to have you in the room, another actor.
I guess, but also
like
maybe
you.
Totally nerve-wracking. I mean, you know, here's someone that was been cast in the part, and then
you're like, I've already been cast.
But then also I was thinking, like, as I'm reading this over and over and over, I'm like, oh god, I'm getting stale, and they're gonna
fire
start,
me,
like, second guessing yeah. choosing me. It's just, it was a very strange process. But when Eric was cast, I was extremely excited for him, and I loved him, and I loved reading with him, and I thought he brought a different spin to the character that no one else had. And I said, you know, I asked the casting director if I could have Eric's number, and I called him and I congratulated him. I was like, do you want to go out and have coffee with me? And so we sort of had like this first date, and like halfway through the coffee date, I realized it was Valentine's Day. Isn't that crazy?
That's so sweet.
So I was like, well, this is fortuitous.
That's so sweet. Yeah. So you became friends right away.
Yeah, I mean, we knew
lovers.
We had to lovers.
It was Valentine's
really.
Day.
Yeah, yeah. I open mouth kissed him on the first date.
That's awesome.
I didn't.
That's awesome. My daughter's in this room, and you take that back. Thank
Sorry,
you.
Sorry, I did not do that thing I just
Thank
said.
Thank you very much. Well, you are gay.
Correct.
Eric is not.
He's not. No.
I think that is really interesting.
It is.
And I want to know, do you think they knew you were gay when they cast you? And do you think they knew one way or the other about Eric when they cast him? Or did they not care?
I don't know the answer to the first question. I don't know if they knew I was gay. I assume they did. I don't know. It was one of those things where I kind of just assumed people in the industry knew. And then there was like this, like, are you going to come out? And I'm like, but everyone already knows. And then I ended up talking about it on some talk show. And they're like, oh, you came out on The View or whatever. And I was like, right. Did I though? I guess I did. But
so that was not something you thought about beforehand. Like, I'm
right.
going on this show that a lot of people watch, and I'm going to talk about it really
right.
openly.
I didn't think about it. I knew I was going to be very vocal about it. I knew it was going to like awaken the activist in me, because I knew it was going to be a platform for other things, and I wanted to use it as that. But I do think they knew that Eric was straight. You know, and there was a part of me that was like kind of bummed out that they didn't cast a gay actor in that role,
right.
But there is that thing too, and I was actually just thinking about this when I was watching Angels in America, like with Andrew Garfield. Like, you know, that's such a great opportunity for a gay actor, but at the same time, he gave such a beautiful performance.
Yeah.
And then also, it's a double standard, because I would love to play straight roles still, and so, like, you know,
right? I'm sorry, that's not this weird thing. That can't happen.
That's not gonna happen anymore. But it is that weird, tricky thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I do sometimes feel that these roles should be given to gay actors, and like, I love seeing the boys in the band on Broadway right now, and it's every single one of them is an out gay actor, and
right.
I think it's a beautiful thing. But then I think, well, I don't want to just play gay actors, so
right.
it's an interesting conversation to have. I
yes.
don't know the answer to it.
Well, I do. something that this ties really beautifully into, and anyone who follows me on social media, which is you 20 people.
More than that.
22 people. Actually, no, it's been a thrilling thing to be able, the way you were able to use Modern Family as a platform. I feel really proud that I can use this podcast and social media to promote causes and organizations that I think are doing amazing work. And something I found out about Jesse is that he started a company called Tie the Knot, and basically he took his love of bow ties, which I want to ask when that started, your love of bow ties, which you're not wearing your signature bow tie today.
No, people get very disappointed when I'm not in a bow tie. It sort of just came from having to go to these fancy events and having to, you know, wear tuxedos, and I was like, yeah, I always wanted to spruce it up, and I found myself drawn to, you know, something flashier around the neck. I was
right.
like, and so Justin, my husband, and I were talking about creating a bow tie line, and it was really going to be for profit. I was like, let's just do it and make some money. But we also had this idea to create a foundation and give back. And we decided to combine this idea. And so we designed a line of bow ties with this great company called The Tie Bar, which was at that time just an online venture. And they designed these bow ties with us. And then the proceeds from the bow ties went to Tie the Knot, which was our foundation. And then we farmed that money out to all these different organizations that were sort of in the trenches fighting for marriage equality. Because at that right. time, we had like six states that right. were that marriage equality was legal in. And we really wanted to
raise awareness
and also like get marriage equality across the United States. And it was just a
you
fun tie. And we did it single-handedly.
Good
yes.
work.
But it was, you know, it's sort of this fun tie and weddings and marriage equality and bow ties. And it just made sense.
Yes. Not Botox. Bow ties.
Bow ties.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm doing bowties.org. Every shot I get.
Yeah.
Is in the name of some great cause. It's amazing.
Perfect.
So now marriage equality exists
right.
in 50 states, in the 50 United States.
Yes.
But the organization remains.
Right. And we did think, you know, our dream was that we'd be put out of business.
Yeah.
And that this would just be something that we have. But then things changed in the past few years. And we're like, oof, you know, these rights that we work so hard for are now in danger of being taken away. And there was still, you know, right after marriage equality passed, there were so many states where you could be married on a Friday and then on Monday go into work. And because you are married, you could be fired from your job.
Right.
And
right.
so the work wasn't done. And there was a lot of like pushback from some people. You're like, oh, we'll just be happy for what you've won. And I was like, well, yes, we can celebrate this great thing. And we are celebrating, but there's still, we have to protect these rights. So it's like, there's still so much work to do. So yes, celebrate, pat yourself on the back, but not for too long, because we have to stay aware and we have to stay activated.
Exactly.
And that's why we're still raising money for Tie the Knot. And a lot of it goes toward education and outreach. You know, there's just so much work to still do. So.
And first of all, most of the proceeds from tonight, my proceeds are going to go to Tie the Knot.
Thank you so much for
that. And
the
work that they do. So thanks to you. It gives me such great pleasure
Thank
to
you.
Support these beautiful organizations. I want to ask, when you first started out, or maybe even more recently, are there any really embarrassing stories that you can share with us? Because it will make us feel better. From your performance career or an audition story or something that comes to mind where you thought, I'm going to crawl out the window and go home and never come back?
I mean, there's so many. I don't know what to tell first. I mean, Celia's laughing because there's many things that happen on the stage at Spelling Bee, but I don't know if they're proper for this podcast. they are, you think so? So there was this... The Palm is right across the street from the Circle in the Square Theater, the Palm Restaurant, and they were always very good to us, sending us treats to the theater. They'd send us these huge carrot cakes that no one in their right mind could finish. But one summer, they were kicking off their like lobster dinner special, and so they decided to have a party for us in between shows on a two-show day to have lobster dinner at the Palm. So we all went to the Palm at like 5 between shows and had these massive
Huge.
Lobster dinners, and then went back to the theater to do the evening show. And all of us were like, oof, boy, oh boy. I mean, you don't have a lobster dinner on a two show day in
nope.
between your shows. And so all of us were just kind of like, oh, and there's a part of the show where I was left on stage, and also just know that at the Circle in the Square Theater, which is where Once in This Island is playing right now, the audience is really right on top of you.
Yeah.
So there was a point of the show where Sarah Salzberg and I were sitting on these bleachers, and the audience was as close as you are to me right now. And I was just having some gas issues.
You were uncomfortable.
I was. And so Celia and Dan were on the other side of stage having a very intimate scene.
Yeah.
And I was like whispering to Sarah, I was like, I'm not feeling very good from this lobster dinner. And Sarah was always, she's very method. She was always in character. And her character had a lisp. And she's like, what's wrong, Connie Bear? What are you, like, just like under her breath, what's wrong, Connie Bear? What's going on? I was like, I just feel like I'm gonna have like gas issues. Well, you just gotta fart then. If my dad says it's very unhealthy if you just keep a farting. You just gotta fart. So I started getting the giggles because she was just like, and she's a pillar on stage. She does not laugh.
How do those
just
people do
egging
it?
Egging me on.
Yeah.
And I started laughing so hard, I farted. And so I started giggling. And Sarah started
giggling.
And it
wasn't a secret fart.
And it was loud enough. And as I said, the audience is very close to us. I heard the audience member that was closest to me go, ew. Which then made Sarah start laughing. So then Sarah goes, I'm peeing my pants. And sure enough, she starts urinating her pants. So I've basically had a lobster fart, which was not a dry fart, by the way.
No.
And Sarah starts peeing. We're on a Broadway stage, and Celia and Dan finish their scene and kind of walking over to us like, what's going on over here? And Dan, who is a master improviser and also a pillar of strength on stage, smells this terrible odor and goes, all right, who beefed? And which just made me laugh even harder. So that was, I mean, so many things. I felt so terrible for our dressers. You know, they had to like come into the dressing room with like tongs at the end of the Oh, that was.
That was a
Celia
really
made me
good
tell
one.
That.
Good for you, Jesse Tyler Ferguson. I want this hour is speeding by because you are so unbelievably funny. But I would be remiss if I didn't let our audience ask you a couple of questions. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So does anyone have a question for Jesse Tyler Ferguson about anything?
What's the best advice I could give a young actor coming into the world today? I think remaining truthful to yourself and not comparing your skills to other people's skills, which is something that's a trap I totally fell into. It's hard not to think that you should be doing more and you should be able to do more. And you're like, I have a terrible, I'm not good at accents. And I always thought I should be good at accents. I should be able to do, you know, a great British accent or a great French accent. And I'm just not very good at it. And there came to be a point where I like, let myself off the hook for that. I'm like, that's just something that I'm not that great at. And that's okay. And I need to focus on the things that I am good at and that I love doing and that are in my wheelhouse. And there'll be a time, and there was a time when I did Fully Committed that I had to figure out how to do accents and like
yeah.
a lot of accents and like it was okay. Like I was scared of it and I was challenged by it, but it's something that I knew just had to happen, but I wasn't weighed down by it. And I feel like there's just, I see that young actors feel this need to just do everything well. And I think that's something that I was taught in acting school. And I'm always telling people to let go of that and just do the things that you do well. Well,
I think that's incredible advice like that, for humans. Great,
yeah, absolutely. I mean
beyond actors.
One of my favorite musicals is Title of Show, and there's that great song, I'd rather be 9 people's favorite thing than 100 people's 9th favorite thing. And I think that's such a great motto to live by.
So there's something I want to ask you about, and then I'll let someone else ask. But we are all obsessed with the carpool karaoke's because we can't believe we get to see these artists that we love kind of be so human and vulnerable in the mm-hmm. car with James Corden.
Right.
But you did one for the Tonys with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Audra McDonald and Jane Krakowski.
Correct.
And it was one of the best ones ever. And it is rare. I mean, if you were a real housewife, I'd be like, how much is scripted and how much do
right.
you really, like, is that your house in Beverly Hills? So can you give us a little bit of insight and behind the scenes of what it was to do that?
Oh,
because
I'd love
it's
to.
So amazing. And your dynamic with Jane Krakowski, which was a whole B story in the A story of the thing. I assume if you haven't seen it, you'll go and you Google and YouTube it when you get home. Tell us everything.
I was a fan of the concept that James had created, so I was beyond thrilled when he asked me to do this, and I saw who else was doing this with me. The first part of the carpool karaoke happened with just Lynn and James in the car, and then they pick up Audra and me and Jane. So while they were filming that, we knew what songs we would be singing. I hope I'm not like pulling the curtain back too much, but you are aware of what songs you're going to be singing. And there was me and Audra and Jane were left in this like holding area, and we were just drilling
outside or inside,
inside a building, but we were drilling songs to One Day More and like on Broadway. And I don't remember what else we sang. Seasons of Love.
Yeah.
And but it's like I did kind of come out of my body just watching like Audra McDonald, who to me is just like, I mean, beyond just watching her like drill lyrics to Seasons of Love. I was like, I'm done here if this is all it's going to be. We did have some cheat sheets taped on the back of the seats. And
okay.
That
that they put for you?
They put there for us, but like, but don't refer to them a lot. But you're then like okay, that's all right we were looking at first. So we had to like do it one time, twice, just because we were all obviously just reading something on the back of a car seat. But it really truly was not that rehearsed. And all that stuff with Jane and I, where we were singing One Day More from Les Miserables, and I was Marius, and she was Eponine, and Audra was Cosette. And so I was playing the dynamics of that relationship. That just sort of happened because I was improvising. And
yeah.
Jane's such a great actress and improviser. She was going along with me. And it really wasn't rehearsed. And that was...
So where are the cameras?
They're sort of stationed throughout the car. They're sort of in... They were everywhere. I felt like we were in, like, you know, AI or something. They were just kind of everywhere. And we weren't on... James was actually driving the car.
So you're really driving around. You're not being towed.
We weren't on a trailer. Okay. No, we were just driving really slowly around Midtown, not drawing any attention to ourselves at all.
No.
You know, driving super slow with a million cameras around
and a
you.
A Range Rover and Lin-Manuel Miranda.
With James Corden and Lin-Manuel Miranda, who like is the most recognizable person in all of America now.
Yeah.
But it was... super exciting.
It was amazing.
And then they ended up showing a longer version of that at the Tony Awards. And I do remember when we were at the Tonys, I was in the room when it was being aired, and I was sitting on the aisle, and Oprah was presenting next, and she came by and she said, that carpool thing was amazing. And she like gave me a hug, and I just looked around to see if anyone else was seeing this moment. And who was it? Oh, God. Oh, it was Bebe Neuwirth, of all people. She just goes, I clocked it. I don't know Bebe Neuwirth, but like she knew that I needed someone to acknowledge the fact that that thing just happened. And she was like, I saw it.
There's no people like show people.
Really, truly.
There's no people like
we know what we need from one another.
Yeah. So to Bebe.
Yep.
To Bebe. First of all, thank you for Tie the Knot. .org. I can't even believe that was available. I think about like the fact that the domain was even available.
I know, we got very lucky.
I'm just saying, like, not for nothing. That alone is amazing. if you do nothing else.
If I do nothing else, I've gotten that. Yeah.
No, if you do nothing else, actually, quite seriously, what you're doing by taking your platform, which I think is, aside from the loss of anonymity and the joys of and perks of being on a show, I would imagine the greatest joy for all of us is to be in a position to be able to do something about what we care about.
Well, and we all can. That's just that you don't have to have a platform like I do. Like I'm very grateful that I do, and the outreach is farther than I would if I wasn't on the show. But that's the thing. I mean, I think that's what we really need to focus on now, and especially in times like this, is doing whatever you can with whatever you can possibly, with the
Absolutely.
Time that you have. I mean, there's so much we can all do.
Well, but you're doing it in your way. And I know I speak for all of us when I say thank you for bringing us so much joy watching you, because
thank
we
you.
All need that outlet and release right now. And your work on Modern Family and all the things I've seen you on stage, it's seamless where you end and where the character begins, and seeing you in all of these different things, realizing often you have ended and the character has begun in a way that is quite a distance from who you really are, brings the point home all the more that you are an extraordinary actor.
Oh, you're so
and
sweet.
It is a privilege to get to be with you today and be on the planet with you in general.
Aww.
And thank you all for being here today and spending your Sunday with us. It means the world to me and Jesse.
Thank
that
you
are here. And
come
thank
see Log
you to
Cabin.
The W.
Log Cabin at Playwrights Horizons.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes. All right. Thank you, W Hotel. Thank you to all of you. And I guess we can put on some music and please stay and buy drinks and please tip the people here well. They work really hard and we appreciate them. So thank you, people behind the bar, and thank you to all of you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody. Clouds can make the wind blow. If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast, and on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hangar Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media. Located in Times Square, Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.